Hi everybody, I'm Ken, I'm an addict.
Hi Ken.
I'm still clean, and that's a good start. I'm a bit nervous, bear with me, I'll work that one out. And I was talking to my friend earlier today, and all those days he was going on me, what am I going to talk about? And I needed to remind myself, I'm not at the London Palladium, and I'm not, and... and too many of you in here know me, so I better tell the truth as well. And so that's a good place to start, I think. And it is great to be here tonight, and it's been a surprise to see a few faces, and always good to see the same old. And it's taken away that obsession that I've had meeting up with people before the meeting and afterwards. And I went to have a look at a few trains in the museum while I was about today, so it hasn't been a bad day, no work either. And and I really I've been looking forward to coming and sharing, so let's get on with it then. I'm gonna have a go without being too clever, try and keep some sort of theme going, because today I want to be able to put my hand on my heart and say I'm free from fear, anger and resentment. I want to be able to do that, and there's just a little bit of fear, not fear of talking or anything like that, just a little bit, but I am free from anger and I am free from resentment. I'm clean, I'm free from anger, I'm free from resentment. And I'm very nearly free from fear. I don't know about you, but that's what I call recovery. And that's what I'm striving to do. And I was in a Step 2 meeting this morning. It was an early morning meeting, 7 o'clock in the city. And it was one of those times when a sentence in that Step 2 reading bounced out at me because I hadn't heard it. Well, I must have heard it hundreds of times, but it never registered with me. And because it doesn't say it's in the first step, but it said the first thing we have to do is stop using. It's simple, but it doesn't say it in the first step. And I do know that there were moments of clarity and lucidity in my using when I could have practiced that first step. You know, I knew that I was powerless over that thing called addiction. I knew it. I was in denial most of the time, but there were moments when I knew that I had no power over it, and also that my life had become unmanageable. I was unemployable. My children were in care. I wasn't allowed in my wife's house. I had to run away from the area where I was using on more than one occasion. I couldn't manage to pay bills. It was unmanageable for me. I couldn't live my life without, with them, with or without. And so the first thing I had to do was stop. And I'm going to go back, I'll tell you a little story. Please, if you were in the West Country Convention, so I've only ever shared it once, so please bear with me. Give me 2, 3, 4 minutes. This is what my mum and dad were dealing with. I grew up in the same room as my brother, who's a year older than me, and we've turned out completely different. Completely different. We support the same football team, and that's it. Hopefully I'll come back to him in a bit later, because I love him so much, and he makes me laugh, and I've got something that I want to share with you. But I was about 11, and it was me, my brother, and my brother's mate, and we're in the city centre in the bus garage, and it's full of diesel fumes, and we go there for one reason only, to procure a packet of fags and some porn. And this is the early mid 1960s, so it's different. Yeah, I know if you walk into newsagents today, there's a shelf full, but you maybe, if you were lucky, could get, there was two such publications. But we knew that if we went to this particular newsstand in the bus garage, the fella would not only sell us a packet of fags, he'd let us buy one of these magazines as well. So we did that, and we sat on the curb in this in the bus garage. And it's quite active, quite hectic, city centre, and fags, number six, porn, fantastic. I'm 11 years old, and I'm thinking to myself, this is just fantastic. This is the life. It can't get much better than this. This chap turns up, raincoat, and if I close my eyes, I can still see his face. He's just fellow says, "All right, lads, what's going on? Porn. Let me have a look." And this show this phone, and I've showed this, give me this book, and he goes, "Oh, fantastic! He's like, I've got loads of this at home. Do you want to come and have a look?" And I turned to my brother, and hey, my brother's going, "Of course we don't want to come and have a look. What are you talking about?" And my brother's mate's looking at the floor, and I turn around to this bloke and I go, "Yeah, of course. Let's go. Let's get it on." And this fella must have thought it was Christmas Day or something. And he's got me, and I'm off. And I've gone, and there's an escalator up into the shopping centre, into the Palisades, I think it was, from the bus garage. And I'm halfway up this escalator with this bloke. I've gone. He's got me. And my brother gets really sensible and started screaming. And this fella, he's gone, bolted. And brother's like, "Get back out of here! Get back out of here! Get out of here!" And I can remember turning around to go some stairs and still going up, saying, "But he's got the book! He's got the book!" Listen, it didn't matter. I had a good mum and dad. I had a good, close-knit, nuclear and extended family. And I had it drilled into me, the same as everyone else. You know, whatever you do, do not go off with strange men. You know, whatever, for whatever reason. And all I've got in my head at the time is this vision of, if not a room full of these magazines, you know, at least a cupboard, you know, with the doors bursting open, and this bloke's got the treasure. And I guess that was what my mum and dad were dealing with. And and when it came to it, "Do you want to try some of this?" Of course I want to try some of that. I'm a drug taker. Of course I want to try some. I want to be a drug taker. I want to try some drugs. Do you want to try some? Of course I want to smoke some pot. Of course I do. Do you want to take some acid? Of course. Fucking right I want to take some acid. What does it do? You're about to find out. On and on. I'm still at school. I was at school. I can remember... Once, I lost my dad. My dad died in an accident, and I don't think that helped, to be honest. I had a lovely family, and we were really quite close, and we lost our dad, and the adhesive seemed to come away a little bit from our family, and we had our problems, and I can remember it was the first time that I remember saying, because my mum was obviously really, really distraught. And I can remember saying to myself, and she's bringing it up, you know, and you're taking drugs. And I can remember saying, "That's it, no more. I'm not using anymore." That was the first time, and I'm 16 years old. That's it. I'm gonna have a go. I'm not using anymore. That was my first attempt at not using, it didn't work. And over the years. It went on. I can remember I got married, had children. Drugs became a way of life for me, and it became very difficult for the people around me to cope with me, and I was struggling with it as well. And I can remember my wife sent me off to a psychiatrist once, which was a surreal event. I can't remember, but I knew that I was going to have a go at trying to get some drugs off him, and he wasn't having it at all. And there was a couple of times like this, and I can remember a couple of times when if you don't stop, this is it. I'm going to stop. I know I'm going to stop. I really want to stop. I want what's on offer in my family house. I want this. I want this. I'm going to stop. And couldn't. And then began to lie about me using. And the end of my family life happened on Boxing Day in 1985, when I was invited back for Christmas. I'd come to London to run away. And I was a grown man running away. So I went back home. I was invited back on condition that you don't bring any drugs with you. And I went home on Christmas Day, managed Christmas Day, but Boxing Day morning, woke up in the morning, I'm just nipping next door to see Brian, won't be long, okay, see you in a bit. And I came back a couple of hours later, out of my head, with blood dripping down my arm, and denying what had gone on. And that was it. You're out. It's all over. And that was the end of my marriage. And it was one of those things for me where I really didn't want it to happen. Really didn't want it to happen. But I wanted drugs more, just a little more, not much more, I don't think, but more. I was powerless. I didn't have the power. I wasn't able to do it. And it went on for years and years. Another 9 years. And I ended up on the park bench in Camberwell Green. Picking up dog ends off the floor, 2, 3, 4 people round a £10 bag, cans of lager, and it was very miserable, and I was very lonely. And by then, I'll pick up this theme now, by then I was full of resentment, full of anger, and full of fear. I was really resentful about my past. I couldn't believe that these people had done this to me. I just could not believe. How could they put me in this position? Why did they do that to me? The bastards. And because of that, I was angry about the present, about my situation, and I was bloody frightened about what was going to happen to me. And I just began, round about, you know, I was coming up to, I was 38 years old, nearly 39 years old, and I began to think that I was going to die. And it began to dawn on me that, you know, I hadn't really been a credit to myself or to my family, and I was dying. And just at the right time, one of the community nurses suggested to me that I go into a detox, and I ended up in the detox in South London, where Narcotics Anonymous came in on a Thursday night, and Ken, NA tonight, would you like to go? I forgot to, no, you don't, but I think that you should. Oh, all right then. And ended up in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting for the first time. Two people came and took the meeting. Two people from the South London Hospitals and Institutions Committee came and took the meeting, and carried their message of recovery to me. I haven't used since, despite myself, and I'm one of the lucky ones, you know. I walked out of that meeting with a bit of hope. I must have done. And it wasn't easy. To get 30 days clean seemed to me, it took more than 30 days, I thought. And it was a bloody long time. But to get 30 days clean was... I can remember standing up for a key. I was too scared to take a white key ring. But I can remember taking a 30-day key ring, and somebody may have said to me, "You're well on your way now." And I was. And the days went into weeks, went into months, and I got to about 9 months clean, and I had no tools or no equipment to deal with the resentment and the anger and the fear. It was still very present. No drugs, though, to put them to one side for a while, and I felt that they were killing me too, and if they weren't killing me, they were driving me mad, and I was driving everyone else mad as well. And I'd reached a point in my recovery where I was letting people off the estate into my place to use in the kitchen. I was hiding behind the settee when my new NA friends came to call to see where I was. It was like hiding from the bailiffs, you know. And they was just so sweet. I hardly knew these people, and they were shoving notes through the door, you know, "Hope you're okay, ring us if you want to come to a meeting, we'll come and pick you up." And that was happening to me, and I don't know why or when it happened, but I did make a decision to use, there was no Road to Damascus event for me on that day, but I did change my mind, and I thought, I'm going to go to a meeting instead and be miserable. And so I went to South Norwood on Friday night. It's not there anymore. Sad. It's one of those ones that I do remember. And I remember going into this meeting. There's only about 6, 7, 8 people in there. And I can remember saying that I didn't know what I was doing. And I felt that I was very close to using. And I wanted somebody to help me. And I was going to have a go at these steps, if I could get somebody to sponsor me. And that was probably the most important NA meeting I've ever been to. It was the first time that I had to go at telling the truth. First time I had to go at, I'd let it be known that I was willing to have a go. I was willing to have a go. And I do share it often. I'm not an expert, and I am certainly not an authority on this stuff, but I am still willing to have a go. And it's worked for me. I'm still here. I know that I need to, A, keep myself clean, and B, it's only me. You do what you feel you need to do. But me, to strive for freedom from resentment, anger and fear. I need to strive for that, because if I don't keep on top of it, it will be back. It will run my life. And if resentment, anger and fear are running my life, using becomes... they go together. They do. I don't have any experience. I'm lucky. I don't have any experience of relapse since I came in. I've stayed clean since my first meeting. I am so lucky. But I have heard thousands. I've been to enough meetings. I've been coming back clean for 14 years. I'm still going to 3 meetings a week. I must have heard that story thousands of times. Thousands of times of what happens to people like me when we pick up the first one. What happens to people like me when we pick up the first one? And for whatever reason, oh, I stopped going to meetings, and I thought I was cured, or it was my birthday, my girlfriend left, I had a baby, and this, and just, I've heard them all, but it's the consequences that are the same, or that I've heard in this room. I am grateful and thanks to those people who have made it back and come back and said, I thought I could take one, and this is what happened to me. And I know, because I have a couple of cosy anecdotes where we all know of one or two people who, well, so-and-so went out and he has a drink and he's all right and he still goes to work and all that caper and he's fine. We all know. We've all got cosy anecdotes like that. But I've also got thousands of stories, thousands of accounts of what's happened to people like me when we pick up the first one. So unless I'm caught in a moment of staggering arrogance, which I am capable of, I know that, you know, why should I think that I'm any different? And why would I want to be any different? You know, I really want what's on offer in here. My life is here. I feel at home here. I've got my friends here. I love addicts, really. It's great. I do a bit of service for the fellowship, and it works for me, and it's become a way of life for me, staying clean, keeping clean, striving for that via our 12 steps, striving for that freedom from anger, resentment and fear. And I'm going to be okay as long as I keep turning up and I keep trying and I keep striving. I can cope with anything that life's going to throw at me. And let's get real for a second, please. What other people want to say is their business, but, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I've never had a bad day in recovery. Of course I have. You know, life turned up, and it does turn up, but I can cope with anything. I can. I'm quite lucky. I'm living in an advanced industrialised society. We haven't got to cope with famine, pestilence, war, disease. I've got to cope with that clean. I've got to cope with my kids. You know, their silly nonsense, and mine as well. You know, my friends, lads at work, I've got to cope with their stuff, you know. And that's a good link. It was good because I wanted to share this about part of the program. When I got to step 6 and 7, where I began this stuff, I began to see that this stuff was working and how progress had been made. I was working not far from here, down at Embankments, and I was nearly 2 years clean. I was on step 6 and 7, and if you're new to those steps, or you don't know, I could be talking a foreign language now. I certainly would be in my first meeting. Step 6 and 7, these are ones where, you know, are there any changes that I want to make, that I'm willing to make about myself? And I got to that point, you know, I don't want to be resentful. And I'm working with a fella who's at it all day, every day. And he's driving me mad. And I got to that point in my, you know, for me it was, I know a lot of us, I was incredibly self-righteous. And, you know, anybody who was using anything at all, at any time, you know, needed my guidance and assistance. And so I imposed myself on his space and boundaries in no uncertain manner, and he let it be known that I was not allowed to impose myself on his space and boundaries, and he could do as much as he do what he liked, and everything like that. So this caused me a lot of pain, and phone calls, this after a couple of weeks, my sponsor driving him mad, really not. And in the end, he's getting a bit aggressive, you know, a bit, he's getting a bit mouthy with me. He was making it worse, and the football was on as well. It was a European Championship at the time as well, and so all that's going on. It's a bit tense, and in the end, my sponsor said, "Look, you're going to have to tell this bloke not to fuck with you And I said, right, okay then. I went to work that night, told him not to fuck with me, and the next minute we're rolling on the floor fighting. And this, there was a, I think it's what therapists might call boundary failure, taken place in a big way. And we're rolling around on the floor in the tunnel, tools everywhere, chaos. Problem, man, is it's. Apart from, I've had a couple of fights with kids, but it's the only fight I've had since I've been clean. And just mad, it was just proper madness. And that is, and I was no better. So nearly 2 years clean, full of anger, full of resentment, and full of fear. Really, you know, I think I've got to go back to work tomorrow and face up to this again and do this again, you know. And squaring up with him, he was mad. Anyway, 6 weeks later, the job finished. I don't know, a few weeks later. 6 weeks later, I get a phone call. Ken got a great job for you, really nice little number. 6 weeks work, dead handy. Go up there, put your feet up, lovely, nice and cool. Get up there. So I go up to this other end of the network and walk into this place, and the supervisor is this bloke. This is a year or so later, he's the supervisor. Oh, God. And it's awful, and I am full of dread with this stuff. And I was there for 6 weeks, and it was the best 6 weeks work I've ever done. You know, this lad was fantastic. He was great. Nothing had changed. He was just no different. But I had. And I had a level of acceptance. I remember, hey, that's up to you. You, that's fine. You can do that. You know, cool. That's great. And we ended up being really, really good mates. And I'm not in touch with him anymore, but I do see his friends occasionally, and always ask after him. And no change. And I suppose they say to him, no change. I see Ken, no change, you know, still self-righteous. And, but I did realise, you know, that this thing, this recovery that we're striving for, you know, I did realise that I am capable of reaching that level of acceptance where the anger can dissipate. And I certainly wasn't frightened anymore of that situation. And it helped me. And it was one of those parts of the learning curve, if you like, that spurred me on to strive for more. And I don't know, I was going to look it up in the dictionary, but I thought it might be a bit clever. You know, I don't know what recovery means to you, but that's what it means to me, you know, getting myself better, being able to live with others, certainly keeping myself clean, and being all right and one with the world and the people around me. That's great. And little things, like I've had many events like that since, but that was the first one, and it was the one that I remember, and this one that sticks with me, and this is the one that stays in my heart. It's you know, that was the key for me. You know, it is possible. You know, other people don't have to change necessarily. You know, maybe it was about me changing, and in that case it certainly was. So all blimey. Anyway, I only got to I missed 20 million words ahead of myself. Anyway, it's been great to share. I'm not going to bang on. I just want to share a couple of things. I want to go back to my brother, because he was great with me when I was using. I was in prison once. He came to visit me. We had a fight in the it was just mad, you know. And that was how he was. And he's completely different to me. And he's a man of few words. And he sends me these emails. He's a bit better on the phone, but he sends me these emails, and I get one word. Two letters. Okay. Not even a question mark. Okay. And then I'm off. Oh, it's really good to hear from you. How are you doing? I'm not too bad. Work's going all right. The kids are fine. Sister's okay. 1,500 words and two pages about the football. And he must get these in my sense. Oh, and he's telling me if he's all right. Fine would have been enough, but I don't need him to do any more than that, I love him for doing that, but I had one about a month ago. I had an email from him. It was great because it was two words. He said, "You okay?" Well, he must have been pissed, was it? Verbal diarrhea of the brother. Bless him. And he's really close to in my heart today. And I don't see him that much. And, you know, I don't have to be in and out of his house or in and out of his life. He's not, as far as this is probably just too touchy-feely for him. It is. It is for a lot of people. He doesn't need it. He doesn't need to be, you know. I like being the way that I am with him, and he likes being the one. That's fine, you know. And he's my big brother. We grew up in the same room, and I love him for it. And he stuck by me all the time. He never gave up, never. And I was grateful for that. And good. I'm glad that I mentioned him. I've finished now. I just a couple of things. I'm not going to talk about my kids, but grandchildren now. I've got 8 grandchildren now. Great, and they're great because they don't point the finger at all. The girls do occasionally. You know, if it wasn't for you. But my grandchildren are all lovely. Only one of them, well, she didn't even know when I was using, but she was born just before I got clean, and the others have ever know me nothing other than clean, and they're great, and they, you know, great fun with them. And there's one little lad, he's so sweet, and he's just lovely little boy, and I'll let him know, you know where I'm going with this, but so I give him a bit of a ribbon every now and again, and he comes back to me and goes, "Grandad, do you know how I know that you're gay?" "You like girls." Well, dead giveaway there then. But that sort of stuff, honestly, it touches my heart, and it really is. And we've all got little stories like that, and they're just so sweet. And it doesn't matter. I think it doesn't matter. There was one other thing that I wanted to share with you, but it's not important. It's great to be clean, you know, it really is. And please, if you're new, or if it's early days for you, we're all going to say the same thing. Keep turning up clean. If you slip up, keep coming back, and try and keep coming back clean. And if you're willing to make the effort to get it, then that's what you're going to get. And I know that if I keep doing what I've been doing, I'm going to keep getting what I've been getting. And I've really enjoyed sharing with you. Thanks for listening to me. Thank you.